circle to see if its pendulum was still alive. The clock's most demonic feature was the hand-painted moon wheel set above its face in the clock's arch. Mystically, the wheel turned with the waning moon, giving the clock a wizardry that, as a child, transfixed and mystified me, as if it somehow knew the mysterious workings of the universe and the mind of God. It is my experience that all childhoods have ghosts. Tonight, just outside my den stands a grandfather's clock, one of the few antiques my wife and I received from Mary Ann Parkin, a kind widow we shared a home with for a short while before her death nearly 19 years ago. The clock had been a gift to her on her wedding day from her husband, David. David Parkin had been a wealthy Salt Lake City businessman and a collector of rare antiquities. Before his death in 1934, he had accumulated an immense collection of rare furniture, Bibles, and most of all, clocks. Of his vast collection of timekeepers, the grandfather's clock, which now stands outside my doorway, was the most valuable, a marvel of 19th-century art and engineering, and the trophy of David's collection. Even still, there was one timepiece that he held in greater esteem. One that he and Mary Ann cherished above all, a beautiful rose-gold wristwatch. Only 11 days before her death, Mary Ann Parkin had bequeathed that timepiece to my keeping. Her hands and voice trembled as she handed me the heirloom. "The day before you give Jenna away, give this to her for the gift." I was puzzled by her choice of words. Her wedding gift? She shook her head, and I recognized her characteristic vagueness. She looked at me sadly, then forced a fragile smile. "You will know what I mean." Tonight, upstairs in her bedroom, my daughter Jenna, now a young woman of 22, is engaged in the last-minute chores of a bride-to-be. In the morning, I will give her hand to another man. A wave of melancholy washed over me, as I thought of the place she would leave vacant in our home and in my heart. The gift. What in the curriculum of fatherhood had I failed to learn? I leaned back in my chair and admired the exquisite heirloom. Mary Ann had received the watch in 1918, and even then it was already old, crafted in a time when craftsmanship was akin to religion. The timepiece was set in a finely polished rose-gold encasement. It had a perfectly round face, with tiny numerals etched beneath a delicate raised crystal. On each side of the face, intricately carved in gold, were scallop shell-shaped clasps connecting the casing to a matching rose-gold scissor watch band. I have never before or since seen a timepiece so beautiful. From the dark hallway outside my den, the quarter-hour chime of the grandfather's clock disrupted my thoughts, as if beckoning for equal attention. The massive clock had always been a curiosity to me. When we had first moved into the Parkin mansion, it sat idle in the wood-paneled entryway. On one occasion, I asked Mary Ann why she didn't have the clock repaired. She had replied, "Because it isn't broken." Salt Lake City, 1908. Electric sparks fell like fireworks from the suspended cables of a trolley car as the brash clangor of its bell pierced the bustle of the wintry Salt Lake City streets. At its passing, Mary Ann glanced across the snow and mud-churned road, lifted her skirt above her ankles, and crossed the street. Near the center of the block, she entered a doorway marked in arched gold-leaf letters, "Parkin Machinery Company, Office." As she pulled the door shut behind herself, the chill sounds of winter dissolved into the cacophony of human industry. Brushing the snow from her shoulders, she glanced around the enormous room. The man who occupied the desk nearest the entrance acknowledged Mary Ann with clerk-like nonchalance. Mary Ann addressed him. "I am here to see Mr. Parkin.